just for clarification.
Commissioner Lindsay.
Yeah, because I don't see, at least on my screen, I'm not able to see who all the commissioners are in attendance. Can I just get a review of who's all in attendance for commissioners?
Everybody. Sure, Bob.
We have,
you want to summarize that for us?
Officer, Commissioner Edwards, Commissioner McCulley, and then in person, Commissioner Fiscom. Commissioner, is it Thompson?
Thompson.
We're missing Commissioner Johnson, so we have 8 commissioners total.
Seven.
Okay. Perfect. Seven. And welcome to the new commissioners as well. It's an honor to meet you and work with you.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. We'll start off with item number 38, Rob Saxton. If we can, are we waiting for the
attorney is joining shortly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, what you might want to do just briefly is to summarize, especially for our new commissioners, what our process is for reviewing such items as number 38, et cetera. Just a summary of how we go through those items would be helpful, perhaps, for new commissioners, and not for the rest of us as well. So, please.
Well, since you volunteered myself, I'm going to volunteer back to you, Vice Chair Fiscom, and you would welcome to walk through the process of what is involved with our executive session preliminary review reports.
Happy to do so, and you know, my colleagues, my veteran colleagues can correct me, or Mr. Burton can correct me. When we come item by item, we need to vote on every item, even if, as we will see eventually on the regular session agenda, there are some items which are the same. We vote on those individually. In the executive session issues, the first step is always to hear a report from our staff who have conducted a preliminary review of these matters before us. After that, the chair usually asks for commissioners as to whether commissioners have any questions for the staff. Then time is provided for the individuals involved against whom a complaint is pending, not acted upon yet, but pending. Those individuals have a chance to speak to us. Next, we have a chance as commissioners to ask those individuals questions. If we have questions to ask after that, then we move to a commission discussion of the issue before us. And after that, we determine if there's any commissioner who wants to make a motion for action, including possible moving forward or possible dismissal or whatever other action commissioners choose within the law. The good news is, with us, we have our Department of Justice counsel who can help us make sure we stay within the limits of what the law allows. That's all I have to say, Mr. Chair, unless you want to amplify anything.
I mean, Professor Fiscom, that was excellent. I mean, Commissioner Fiscom, that was excellent. And we'll go ahead and start off with item number 38. We can start with a staff report on this case.
Thank you, Chair Mason, Vice Chair Fiscom, Commissioners, Susan Myers, Investigator. Item 8 is a preliminary review report for Rob Saxton, the Interim Superintendent for the Greater Albany School District. Mr. Jackson's attorney, David Elkinich, is present here by video. And before I begin, I want to draw your attention to some supplemental materials that Mr. Elkinich forwarded earlier this week. They were provided to each of you commissioners by email. The complaint in this matter is based on actions that took place last summer at the school district. In late June of 2020, the prior district administration reassigned various school principals to new positions. Sean Saxton, who is Rob Saxton's son, was one of the principals reassigned. He went from being an assistant principal at West Albany High School to being an assistant principal at Timber Ridge, which is sort of a middle school. About a month later, at the end of July, Rob Saxon was hired as the interim superintendent. Because he was going to be out of state for most of August, he hired a gentleman, Rich Seif, to serve as the chief of staff in his absence. Rich Seif started his job on July 28th, and one of his first acts within the next five days was to reassign Sean Saxon and about four or five other principals back to their original positions. In both his written statement and an interview with commission staff, Rich Seif maintained that he made this decision on his own, and that while he spoke with Rob Saxon about the transfers, Rob was clear with him that because Sean was his son, he could not be involved in the decision. Commission staff also interviewed a district administrator who had discussed the staffing changes with Rich Seif before they were made. According to this administrator, she told Rich it did not look good. He responded, "People won't think it's Rob. He's not here." In another conversation, she questioned if he thought people would believe he had made the decision on his own. He stated, "Well, I come with marching orders." When she asked who those orders were from, he did not respond. In the supplemental materials that Mr. Elkinich provided this week, Rich Seif writes that the marching orders were merely his authority to take whatever actions he deemed necessary in the position. Commission staff did seek to interview Heather Huzefka, who is the district's human resources director. She was present in at least one of the meetings with Rich Seif when this all occurred. During the 30-day preliminary review period, we were unable to schedule an interview. Ms. Huzefka did, however, recently contact us and said she would be available. Based on the information provided available during preliminary review, it appears possible that Rob Saxon may have violated the nepotism statute, ORS 244177, by participating in the decision or discussion regarding the appointment, promotion, or demotion of a relative. He may have also violated the conflict of interest statute. We do not know whether he submitted a written conflict of interest disclosure. And the prohibited use of office statute by using or attempting to use his position to ensure his plan avoided a financial detriment resulting from the reassignment. Should this matter be moved to investigation, we would conduct an interview with the HR director, seek to confirm the discussions between Rob Saxon and Rich Seif regarding the reassignment, and follow up with Mr. Seif regarding the conversations he had with district administrators.
Thank you for that staff report. Mr. Elkinich, welcome to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. This is your opportunity to present to the commissioners, and then we'll open it up for questions from commissioners first to staff, and then after your presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. As has been stated, my name is David Elkinich. Good morning. I represent Mr. Saxon. Thank you for the opportunity to present materials in advance of today's meeting today, and thank you also for the opportunity to present here. I appreciate the cooperation with Ms. Myers and the ability to communicate with her ahead of time, so thank you as well. Mr. Saxon was hired to be the interim superintendent for the Greater Albany Public Schools on January 26, 2021, and he is currently serving a 190-day contract. So it's important to know that this contract that he's serving is limited, and it will end, it runs through February 1st, 2022. When he was hired, it was clear to everybody that he had prior commitments to be out of the office the last week of July, and then most of August. And as a result, Richard Seif was hired to manage the day-to-day duties while Mr. Saxon was out. There's no dispute on this point. Mr. Seif was hired on July 28th. His contract lasted for 30 days, and he was given full authority to make all decisions he felt were appropriate in Mr. Saxon's absence. That point is not in dispute either. Subsequently, Mr. Seif, after he was hired, considered whether to make a series of administrative transfers. If you look at the letter that I provided to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, I explain in detail the basis for those transfers. This was not I just came in and decided to undo the transfers that were previously made. They were all cascading transfers for specific purposes. And indeed, Sean was really only a peripheral player because they needed to fill a spot back at West. And so it's outlined in my letter dated October 4th, 2021. Sean did not ask to move and was only, like I said, a peripheral player. He was only moved back to West because of the need to replace Mr. Shaw after it was deemed necessary to move him. Mr. Sykes is unequivocal in his statements and his emails that, quote, the decision to transfer the administrators was entirely my own, and that Mr. Saxton was clear with Mr. Sykes that Mr. Saxton, quote, could have no part in the decision-making process. As a result, Mr. Saxton urges the commission to find there is no substantial objective basis to find that he violated those rules. For purposes of today's discussion, it really seems as though there's three principal issues. First, under RS 2244.177A, whether Mr. Saxton promoted his son to a position with the public body that the public official serves over as public official, exercises jurisdiction or control. I don't believe that Ms. Myers suggested there was evidence to support a violation there, but there is not, of course. Mr. Saxton and Mr. Sykes, the only two people with knowledge of the situation, clearly and unequivocally state that Mr. Sykes made the decision solely on his own. Second, regarding RS 244.177B, the issue is whether Mr. Saxton participated in an interview, discussion, or debate regarding the employment, appointment, or promotion of a relative, here Sean, with the public body that he serves or over which the public official exercises jurisdiction or control. And here, there's no suggestion in the report that Mr. Saxton participated in an interview or debate regarding the promotion of his son. So the question really is whether he participated in a quote-unquote discussion regarding his promotion. And the answer here, we urge the commission to find, is no. There were only two people present for his conversations, and both people indicated that Mr. Saxton could not be part of the process, and that Mr. Saxton made the decision solely on his own. Mr. Sykes said, quote, I fully comprehended and Rob was clear with me that due to the fact that his son was involved in the situation, Mr. Saxton could have no part in the decision-making process. Mr. Sykes does state that he mentioned his plan of transfers to Mr. Saxton, but the mere mention of his plan to Mr. Saxton does not mean that Mr. Saxton participated in a discussion regarding Sean's promotion. For a discussion, there has to be a back and forth, a debate, a sharing of ideas. Indeed, Merriam-Webster defines discussion as one, quote, consideration of a question in an open and usually informal debate, or two, informal treatment of a topic in a speech or debate. There's no evidence at all, let alone a substantial objective basis, to believe that there was an open sharing of ideas or a discussion about whether Sean should be transferred. Being told someone is going to take an action and telling that person you cannot be involved is absolutely not a discussion. Yet the report concludes otherwise and states that Rob Mr. Saxton may have participated in the discussion and decision on the reassignment of his son to West. It does not define discussion, but instead relies on the fact that Mr. Sykes and Mr. Saxton were in contact with each other. That Mr. Sykes told Mr. Saxton that he was making the move, that Mr. Saxton said he couldn't be a part of it, and that Assistant Superintendent Lisa Harlan said that Mr. Sykes said, I come with marching orders. But if you look at the report, this was after Mr. Sykes had already told her, quote, I'm making the decision. And she followed up asking if people would think he decided on his own, and he said, I come with marching orders. Now, the investigator did not go back to Mr. Sykes during the 30-day investigation period, so I went and asked him, and he provided the supplemental email that I provided to the commission, where he explained, quote, what I meant by that statement was that I came with orders to make any changes that I deemed were necessary to establish stability in the district. I did not need Rob's permission, nor did I seek it regarding this decision or any others that I made during his absence. And that's it. There was no discussion about Sean's move. Mr. Saxton was clear he could not be a part of it. And to the extent the investigators relying on the statement about marching orders, Mr. Sykes explained it, and it does not support an inference that Mr. Saxton may have violated the rules. And then finally, RS-244.0401 prohibits a public official from using or attempting to use their official position to obtain a financial gain or avoid a financial detriment for the role, for Sean. And here it's really that latter part that we're talking about. But the report doesn't say how he used or attempted to do so. But regardless, there is no financial detriment to Sean that was avoided by this transfer. Upon Sean's transfer to middle school, he would have kept his high school salary for the 2021-22 school year. So regardless of whether he was at the middle school or whether he was transferred back west, he would have made the same amount of money. And you have to remember that Mr. Saxon's contract is temporary. He's going to be done in 190 days. He's done in just 2 months. He'll be, his contract is completed before the school year is completed. So for the time period of his limited appointment, as well as this entire school year, Sean did not avoid any financial detriment. It is true that after the first year, had he stayed at the middle school, his salary would have stayed the same until it caught up. But that's speculative and prospective. We don't know what would have happened during the school year after the 190-day contract. We don't know whether Sean would have asked to be transferred back. We don't know if he would have stayed at middle school. We don't know what would have happened. And such speculation cannot support a violation of RS-244.0401. For all those reasons, Mr. Saxton respectfully requests the commission find no substantial objective basis to find that he violated the rules. Thank you very much for this opportunity to provide your comments.
Thank you for that presentation. Commissioner Piskum?
Thank you, Mr. Alkanich, if I'm saying your name right. If I'm not, I apologize.
You said it right, Ms. Commissioner Piskum. It's Alkanich. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My quick question is to ask our investigator, Ms. Myers, to repeat for us one more time what it is that she would be doing were we to proceed forward. You summarized that once for us. It would help me to have another summary of that.
Thank you, Commissioner Piskum. As Mr. Alkanich pointed out, in the 30 days that I have for preliminary review, our new period has not yet started. So in those 30 days, this was completed on day 30. I did interview Mr. Seif, I interviewed Lisa Harlan, I interviewed Russ Buckram, I attempted to interview Heather Huzefka, but basically I ran out of time to do additional follow-up interviews. So I was saying, I would like to interview Heather Huzefka simply because what the crux of this case is sort of rests on Rich Seif's credibility in that, you know, he's saying I made the decision on my own. The Lisa Harlan said in her discussions with him at the time of the decision, he was telling her I come with marching orders. People won't think it's Rob because he's not here. It just raised a question mark in our head. And so Heather Huzefka, who was in some of these meetings, could confirm whether her understanding at the time the decisions were being made was accord with what Rich Seif says now, he made them on his own, or do they accord with the suggestion that Lisa Harlan gave of he came with marching orders from someone else to fix, to put everyone back, to give Sean back his position at the high school. Frankly, I don't know. This is preliminary review. I would like to interview Heather Huzefka and probably speak with Rich Seif one additional time to make that determination.
Mr. Chair, let me just add a quick comment, especially for our new commissioners, just for kind of a parenthetical comment. Under Oregon law currently, the time for a preliminary review is limited to 30 days, as our investigator just said. A law was passed in the last session to extend 30 days to 60 days. that is not effective until January 1, 2022. This is an example among many we could cite where 60 days makes more sense than 30 days procedurally. Mr. Chair, I'll yield the floor to my colleagues.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. We'll start off with Commissioner Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Fiskum, thank you. That was the question I was going to ask Ms. Myers as well. And for Mr. Elkinich and other commissioners, I think at the end of your presentation, you asked us to find that there was nothing violated. Really, the question today is whether we proceed forward with additional investigation or not. That's the question that's at the table, and so I just want to clarify that. I don't have any further questions of Ms. Myers or counsel.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. Commissioner Hollister, did you have your hand up?
Thank you, Chair. So thank you, Investigator Myers, for the work and astute summary. I have to say, reviewing this case, I'm really excited about January 1st occurring so that we all have a little bit more time to complete these preliminary investigations. In my review of the facts here is, you know, I can understand where there's still some gaps remaining with respect to the credibility of the respondent in this case. I am leaning towards recommending a dismissal for this reason. It seems to me in a case like this where, at least to me, it doesn't appear there was any financial benefit to the son, I'm more inclined to find that the parties are credible. I mean, if there was some effort to hide the ball here, I just have seen the purpose of it. I understand I think it could be a real problem for public transparency and our nepotism laws if the way it went is, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, I'm going to go fishing in Alaska, and while I'm gone, you know, I'm going to direct someone to hire or make some beneficial decisions for one of my relatives. I think that would certainly not be in line with the spirit of the Oregon Government Ethics Law. And so I can understand why we want to prevent that from happening. But at the same time, in a case like this, where we have at least one witness saying that was not his understanding of what occurred, the party making the decision is saying, no, it was my decision alone. And I can't really see a reason why they would try to make an end run around all of that in terms of getting a financial benefit for son. I just am wondering what the real advantages of devoting our important commissions, our limited resources in investigating this matter further. So I'd love to hear my fellow commissioners' thoughts on that point.
Thank you, Commissioner Hollister. We'll go back to Commissioner Lindsay.
Thank you, Commissioner Hollister. Your thinking is my thinking. In my mind, we have a statement. Well, the possibility is there may have been a violation because one person said, I come with marching orders. Okay, well, let's get clarification on what that person who said it, what they said. And so we could follow up, and Ms. Myers said that she would intend to visit with Mr. Sipe again, and I think we already know what he's going to tell us in the letter that Mr. Alkinich provided us, and that is he provided express clarification of what he meant with marching orders. And he says, that means I had unilateral, complete authority to make decisions. So I think we already know what he's going to say in any follow-up conversation with him. And for that reason, and on top of that, which I didn't think about, is what Commissioner Hollister said was, we don't see any financial benefit there. And so even if they were hiding the ball and doing wink-wink, therefore what? So I'm also inclined to not proceed with an additional investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. We'll go to Commissioner Edwards.
Thank you, and I apologize. I have some work happening in my house, so there's a little background noise. I'm just a little bit troubled with the basis of the decision being including a conversation around staff or organizational capacity. I'm very nervous, given that we're a government entity, of us somewhat subcontracting the investigation to hearing an answer from a lawyer that's been hired by the person who could potentially be being investigated. So I think there's a lot of value to having commission staff do that follow-up question. I'm sure that, to Commissioner Hollister's point, everybody is credible, everyone is doing their jobs to, you know, their best ability and such. But I think there's just a fundamental difference between a question being asked from commission staff versus an outside entity. And so I'd love to hear more reasons on if I'm misunderstanding anything, but for that, it makes more sense to me if there is outstanding questions that those would be left to commission staff to procure.
Thank you, Commissioner Edwards. So we'll go to Commissioner Hollister.
Thank you, Commissioner Hollister. Commissioner Edwards, let me just go ahead and clarify my statement, because I think I did a poor job of explaining my thinking. So when I referenced sort of limited resources of our staff, I certainly wasn't suggesting that we would somehow delegate the obligation to investigate these cases to anyone outside of the commission. So please know that. In my mind, instead, what I was thinking is, you know, there is a burden of proof here, in any case, you can decide to, you know, devote, you know, 10 investigator hours to an investigation or 30, and I think part of our role as commissioners is to decide, you know, what approach is appropriate in any given case based on the facts that we have. If we need more information, and that's why we would move past a preliminary investigation. And so I'm always thinking about what's the utility to the commission of making that additional investment of resources, what additional information will we obtain, and how will it improve our decision making. And so when I talk about, you know, do we want to devote resources, it's really because I'm engaging in that internal analysis, not because I think we should be outsourcing our investigatory process to any third party. So just thank you for the opportunity to clarify that. I'm sorry I didn't make that clear the first time.
And just to clarify my statement, I wasn't thinking that we would subcontract the investigation to another party. I was assuming that we were kind of taking what's being said in this meeting from Mr. Elkinrich as that answer from his investigation as being now what we would assume as being the same answer that Investigator Myers might get. So that I wasn't thinking we would further subcontract that work, but just that essentially we would be doing that in this meeting. So I probably could have picked a better word too and didn't find it.
Thank you both, commissioners. Let's move over to Commissioner Lindsay.
Thank you. I forgot to mention one thing when I responded, and that was one thing that Mr. Elkinich said, and that was that Mr. Saxton only has, I think, a couple of months left. I don't think that that's relevant in our decision-making here. I think the question is what happened during his tenure, and even if he only has 2 months left, so what? I just want to say I don't think that's applicable or relevant in our decision-making. If I'm incorrect, I'd ask that that the director correct me.
You're correct.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. Any other questions for either the investigator or Mr. Saxton's attorney? And I will say I have a question for staff. It's interesting that you have the former superintendent as the initial complaint, and when it starts off on the first page, initially the complaint represents a number of allegations relating to a personal services contract that Melissa Goff entered into with Rob Saxton and his company. Can Investigator Myers give any background on that? Because it just seems like there's a lot. There's other things driving the initial complaint is what it comes across as.
Well, quite possibly. I mean, Greater Albany School District has been in the news a fair amount. They had a very busy summer. My understanding is that the former superintendent had hired Rob Saxton's private business to represent her in some contract negotiations with the school district when she was still employed there. During the summer, when new board members came on, they fired the former superintendent. They hired Rob Saxton. She has all sorts of allegations that created a conflict of interest and that, he violated his fiduciary duty to her as his client. All of that doesn't fall within the jurisdiction of the commission at all. She may have a private tort action against him. I don't know. He threw a lot in the complaint, but the only nugget in the complaint that really fell within our jurisdiction was the nepotism matter.
Got it. Thank you for that. I agree with the commissioners Lindsay and Hollister, but I also see the benefit of going through the full investigation. So me personally, I'm kind of torn. We don't have a motion on the table unless somebody would like to move forward with one. But I think that, this is one of those cases where it would seem like the staff recommendation of moving forward with the investigation is the best route. And if that comes up in the end where we're dismissing the complaint based on, the facts that Investigator Myers have brought forth, I think you'd have a more satisfactory outcome, especially it sounds like with the school district being in the news as much as it has been. But I saw Sean, Commissioner Lindsay's hand was up. We'll go to Commissioner Lindsay.
I'm prepared to make a motion, but I don't want to cut off discussion if other commissioners still want to discuss further.
Is there any other discussion from commissioners? Commissioner Edwards.
I would just love to hear Commissioner Fiskum's perspective on this. I believe Commissioner Fiskum, and tell me if I'm wrong, but in many of these kind of cases, I feel like I hear you say, this is just the investigation. If there's not something that is found, that people essentially are better off for having gone through that process. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on this particular case. Your experience would be very valuable to me in weighing as what Commissioner Mason said is a difficult kind of 50-50 decision.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Edwards. I was going to make a comment, but I was going to wait until the motion and then make a comment about the motion, whatever the motion was. But let me just say this. One of the issues for us, and this is perhaps of benefit to our new colleagues as of this first meeting, if we move forward to conduct an investigation based on a now 30-day, soon-to-be 60-day preliminary review, we are not finding an ethics violation. We are simply proceeding to investigate whether a violation actually exists or not. A preliminary review does not make that contention. As a parenthetical point of view, I will say that sometimes my friends in the media in certain issues before us can get confused by that, because if a decision is made to move forward after a preliminary review, that can come across as constituting a violation, and it in fact does not. I would share our chair's view on this. I was unsure as to how I'd vote, not wanting to be the maker of a motion to replace my friend Commissioner Lindsay. I tend to believe, in light of what I've just said, that the best course is to proceed to conduct the additional steps in our investigation with the good work of our staff to limit the time involved in light of the discussion today and other issues, and to then, on the basis of actually conducting a more thorough review with further interviews, bring back to us the decision about whether to do anything based on that work. So, Commissioner Edwards, I tend to be with Commission Chair Mason in believing that the best approach is to move on to conduct an investigation of these issues involving Mr. Saxton. But for me, it's a close call.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions before I go back to Commissioner Lindsay?
Yeah, Commissioner Thompson would like to talk.
Commissioner Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for staff, am I reading this right, that the only issue on the table is the financial gain issue?
Well, I mean, the ethics laws primarily focus statutory ethics on financial gain or financial loss. The nepotism statute, however, specifies any participation in the discussion to promote, demote, appoint the relative to a position. So that whether a financial benefit or avoidance of gain is necessary for that particular statute, I think, could be clearer. But there was the possibility of a financial detriment. As Mr. Elkanich pointed out, and I tried to point out in my report, yes, his transfer kept his salary the same, but if he stays in that position, his ability to have salary increases is limited, whereas if he's at the high school, the ability for salary increase would not be limited. So there is arguably a financial detriment to the transfer, a future financial detriment.
Okay, so there's two questions. There's the nepotism part, and then there's the financial gain part.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you, Commissioner Thompson. Anybody else? Okay, Commissioner Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate the comments and the questions, and I respect them. But I am going to move forward, with even with our new fancy motions chart that was sent to us, I'd like to make the motion and then explain my reasons for the motion. So I'm going to actually do it word for word here. I hereby move that the commission find that the complaint and information available during preliminary review appears to be insufficient to constitute a substantial objective basis for believing that a violation of Oregon government ethics law has been committed by Mr. Rob Saxton, and that complaint number 21-213 ESM be dismissed. So that's my motion, and then just let me explain. I agree with what Commissioner Fiskum and Commissioner Mason said, that's the purpose of extending the investigation. My point in making this motion is that we already know what we're going to find, and that Mr. Sipes' letter has explained clearly what he meant, and for me that's the end of it. I don't think we can, even after additional conversations, I don't think we can find additional facts to warrant anything. So that's the reason for my motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. Additional discussion on the motion? Commissioner Halster.
Thanks, Chair. So I'll say the way that we talk about preliminary investigations within the commission seems to vary, and I'm trying to sort of grasp, where we think the line is in making these decisions, and what, as Commissioner Lindsay just said, what we're supposed to be focusing on is whether or not there's sufficient evidence to constitute a substantial objective basis for believing that a violation has been committed. And so to me, if our initial investigation doesn't uncover a substantial objective basis, then it seems like our obligation is to close the matter and dismiss it, as opposed to we haven't yet found a substantial objective basis, and so we're going to keep looking. And so, I mean, for me, the former is what the law says. And so here, based on the information we have right now, I don't see that substantial objective basis. And, you know, it's not a situation where we can pull parties in under oath, you know, and get sworn testimony. So, you know, it seems to me that a letter submitted by a witness is as good as we're going to get, regardless of who asked the question. So those are my thoughts at this point. But, you know, if I'm, especially Executive Director Burson, if you have any thoughts on sort of where that line is, I would love to hear them.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Hollister. So, you know, I didn't go to law school, so the substantial objective basis. All I've been told by all the lawyers that ever worked here with the Department of Justice is it's a pretty low bar. So part of that can be that we simply don't know something right now. That the basis could be that in that 30-day plenary review, you simply haven't satisfied kind of all the answers to all the questions. So I don't think it's, like you said, and by the way, at the end of investigation, we need to find that there was a violation. So we don't have that low bar again that we have at the end of the preliminary review. So the bar keeps raising as we go along here. And obviously at the end of investigation, if folks find a violation, we have to be confident enough that that violation, we would be successful in a contested case hearing. So it becomes a higher bar as we go along. But as you know, with the 30 days, sometimes people introduce evidence, like here, you know, we have evidence introduced, and sometimes, you know, the commission staff is going to ask you folks, do you want me to go find out if this is true? You know, if this letter is true, and by the way, or do you want me to also talk to the HR person for the Greater Albany School District? Do you want me to have those discussions? And that's kind of the question right now. If you don't, then we go ahead and dismiss, and you're satisfied that there wasn't a violation, then we dismiss at this point. If you think that you want us to go do that, you move it into investigation, we'll do those things, and we'll have those answers for you when we come back to you at the end of that investigative period. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So hopefully that was helpful. It might not have been.
Thank you. That is helpful. I see another video just popped up on the screen. I wonder if that means our council has anything to add.
Well, I was going to just Mr. Nappy. Thank you, Commissioners and Director Burson. I don't disagree with anything either Commissioner Hollister or Director Burson just said. I just want to give you a little bit more info on the standard, especially for the new members. So I just want to make, I think, 3 points here. Number one, the courts have been clear that you do not have to get the standard in the statute of cause is not probable cause. It's less than probable cause. So you do not have to get to more likely than not. What you have to get to is a substantial objective basis that the person may have committed the violation. Courts have said substantial refers to the quality of the evidence, not the quantity. And then the objective component just means there's not a lot of bias involved there. And so I just, in terms of sort of fleshing out the standard more, just wanted to give you that information. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that, Mr. Nesby. And I do want to point out, too, for new commissioners, the investigator, Susan Myers, Director Burson, and Joshua Nesby, the Assistant Attorney General, all sign off on the recommendation to move forward with an investigation. So I always try to weigh that as well for my decision. But Commissioner Hollister and Commissioner Lindsay make very persuasive cases on why we should look at dismissing. So, any other commissioners to discuss the motion that is on the table? Seeing none, we should proceed with a roll call vote.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Nay.
Commissioner Thompson?
Aye.
Commissioner McAuley?
Nay.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Nay.
Commissioner Hollister?
I'll say nay.
Chair Mason?
Nay.
Motion fails.
Okay. So, Commissioner Fiskum.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add this quick comment for Ms. Hollister and for my colleague Ms. Hollister and others. For me, on preliminary reviews, not being an attorney, which is either a credential or a debit, depending on how you look at it, the key question for me always in these matters is there anything else our staff could reasonably and legitimately do to answer our questions? So is there more work to be done? And when we hear the answer about the more work to be done, do we find that to be credible? And yeah, we should do that, because then we'll really have the proper basis to make a final decision, given that we're not in the business today on these reviews of finding violations. So it's the more work to be done phrase that motivates me on every preliminary review we have before us. That's why I voted no on this, believing we have some obligation to get a little more information. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. First, Commissioner Hollister, then Commissioner McCauley.
I just want to say thank you to Commissioner Fiskum, and I also thank our counsel for that additional explanation of the standard, which was helpful to me personally. I do think that we are making a finding when we vote to move past the preliminary review stage, that we are finding that there is some level of evidence. So I agree it's not a finding of a violation in any sense. It is a finding that, in my mind, that there is a substantial objective basis to continue the investigation, whether that's akin to reasonable suspicion or something else, I'm not sure. But I do, you know, when I think sort of broadly about the power of this commission and sort of, you know, what its limits might be, you know, I do think it's important to keep in mind that our role is not to solve every problem, but to look at the facts before us and you know, make a determination based on those facts. And so this is something I'm going to keep thinking about and really trying to understand more deeply. And this conversation has been really helpful to me. So thank you to each one of you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hollister. First, we'll go to Commissioner McCauley. You had your hand up.
Yes, thanks, Chair Mason. Recognizing I'm new and I'm still learning, I just want to reiterate some of my reasoning for nay, in the sense that from what I heard from Ms. Myers, she felt that she hadn't had time to fully finish what she was doing, and there were some unanswered questions. And I'm hoping with the what's now 30 days and will soon be 60 days will help that. I didn't hear so much as she found something to move this forward. It was she didn't feel that she appropriately had the time to do what she needed to do to come to an appropriate conclusion. And that was my reasoning for that. Just wanted to clarify.
Thank you, Commissioner McCauley. Commissioner Lindsay.
I simply want to say that I wish I were as articulate as Commissioner Hollister. Everything she said is everything I think, but it just doesn't come out of my mouth like her. So I applaud and underline and sustain everything she said. Thank you.
Me too.
That's why we love Commissioner Hollister. We appreciate her perspective every one of these meetings.
Yeah.
Now, did I hear any motion from Commissioner Fiskum? Because obviously we do need to move forward. There does need to be an actual motion to move forward with staff recommendation.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I will, without reading the motion list that we were given, by the way, I appreciate that. That's helpful. But I will move that we accept the staff recommendation to investigate possible to move from a preliminary review and investigate possible violations of ORS 244.177 sub 1, 244.040 sub 1, 244.120 sub 1 sub C, involving Mr. Rob Saxton from the Linn County School District.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, if we can have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Nay.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Thompson?
Aye.
Commissioner McCauley?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We'll move on.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, just first, I wanted to, on behalf of my colleagues, thank Mr. Altonich for appearing before us today. I appreciate the seriousness of that you took as you appeared before us, and I wanted to thank you for spending those moments as well as those words with us. So, thank you.
Thank you,